Uh-oh, Lakers drop game five to the Houston Rockets. Is the team now in big, big trouble? This is the Lakers Collective. Happy to have y'all here. We got a lot to talk about game five, what happened, what this is going to mean moving forward, the return of Austin Reeves, lots for us to get into on today's show. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button. Jovan Buha, Jason Timp, I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, how are we doing?
It's good to see you guys. I'm actually going to try to bring some positivity today. I think everybody should be a little concerned. I think that would be completely irrational to be like, ah, we're fine. But like, I rewatched the tape this morning and like, I just didn't think the Lakers played well. And that's something that, you know, when you have to beat a team four times, you can run into games where you get wins because the other team didn't play well. The Lakers got some of those wins themselves in this series early on when the Rockets didn't play well. But it's really hard to beat a team four times for the Rockets as well. And I think we're going to see at least one very solid performance from this Lakers squad. I'm still feeling pretty optimistic, but everyone should feel at least a little concerned at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I still think the Lakers are going to win the series. They have two chances to win one game. Houston has to win the next two games. And to Jason's point, functionally sweep the Lakers in this series, which, I mean, that's why it's nearly impossible to come back from a 3-0 series deficit, just because it basically means, like, unless it's an injury situation where, like, if the Lakers had been down 3-0 in this series and Luka came back or something, and they you know, that's a different story. But it's tough to, if you're down 3-0, that typically means the other team is better, or at least like enough variables within the series have gone in their favor to take that 3-0 lead and to then win the next four games. There's a reason why it hasn't happened. Now, I would say I'm more concerned than Jason. Like, I was asked about it last night. I think I gave it like a 7.5 out of 10, just because I think the Rockets have, they've pretty definitively controlled the last 10 quarters. I would say at least like 8 of the last 10 quarters.
Minus overtime. Yeah.
Minus the OT. But it's also been like, I mean, part of it's hard to separate your priors sometimes from the analysis in a series where all of us picked the Rockets. Most people picked the Rockets. And it was because I think we thought the series would look more like game four and game five. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers would maybe have a good shooting performance or something like game one, game two. But I didn't think it would go like this way, where LA was up 3-2, obviously. And I still think in the driver's seat of the series. But I don't want to overreact to the last couple of games. Like, the Lakers have not played well. They have looked fatigued, though, and now it's shifting to every other day, so that's something that they're going to have to navigate. Of like, the longer the series goes, obviously, game seven would be at home, but now you're playing three games in the span of 5 days, which for this Lakers team, I think, is a tough ask physically. So we'll see how the rest of the series goes, but I think for now, the Lakers are still in control.
I also said, when I was asked on my show, what's your level of concern out of 10? I said 7 out of 10. It was my concern. I think there should be reason for concern, since it feels like at this point it's been a lifetime since we've seen a good offensive game from the Lakers. They're really struggling on that side of the floor. They've not been able to get things going there. Their offensive rating continues to plummet. So there has to be some concern there. But we've also seen a series where whatever you expect to happen is not what has happened in every single game of the series. We expected the Rockets to win game one. They didn't do it. We thought, oh, okay, well, the Rockets are going to win game two. Nope. The Rockets came back in game three, and then you wouldn't expect the Lakers to win it. They found a way to do it. Everybody thought, okay, well, then the Lakers are going to sweep. Nope. The Rockets won. Okay, well, then the Lakers are really going to crush the Rockets. Game five at home. Killer instinct. They're going to come out here and put them away. Nope. The Rockets won. This has been a weird series to get a read on. I do think there is some truth to the idea that had what happened in game four and game five happened in game one and game two, we would have just said, yep, this is about the way we expected the series to go. But obviously that's not what happened here. So let's get into the specifics. Jason, what did you see in game five, and what do the Lakers need to do better moving into game six?
So I really want to focus on just the talent level of the top end of both rosters, because one of the things that happens when you get to this point in the series, there are little tactical things here and there. Like, we could talk about, you know, whether or not the Lakers should be doubling Şengün as aggressively as they do, what those double teams look like. Like, I thought it was just as much about how sloppy the doubles were as it was about the amount of doubles that they threw. I think that you could talk about the ball handling responsibility and just how much Marcus Smart has the ball, which is like kind of the point of getting Austin back, is you can put Marcus off the ball a little bit more. There's certain you know, kind of tactical things you can dig into. But most of the time when you get to this phase in a playoff series, both teams have kind of figured each other out, and it's really just about who plays better. Like, you look at the Raptors-Cavs series, and, like, you know, the big difference between Game 3 and 4 and Game 5 is, like, just how well Evan Mobley and Jared Allen played compared to how well they played in Toronto, right? The scheme, the way Toronto was guarding Cleveland, has been the same for three consecutive games now. You go to New York-Atlanta, like, in Game 3, C.J. McCollum is scoring on New York's best defenders while Jalen Brunson is really struggling with Nikhil Alexander-Walker and really struggling to score in switches against Onyeka Okongwu. And Karl Anthony Towns, like, can't even drive past Jonathan Kuminga. And then you go to Game 5, and it's like Brunson's cooking Dyson Daniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and Kat is bullying Jonathan Kuminga and talking trash to him, and C.J. McCollum all of a sudden can't score on Josh Hart. And, like, literally these dynamics in these series often just swing on just who's playing well and who's not. And if you look at the last few games for the Rockets, like, Luke Kennard, who played really well in the first few games, has been a non-factor offensively. He hasn't been able to get his game off at all. You look at Marcus Smart, who was like the hero of the series for the first three games, was downright destructive yesterday. And it wasn't just the turnovers. He also was making a lot of defensive errors that were leading to openings for the Rockets. LeBron James, who was making his jump shot at the beginning of the series, 1 for 9 on jump shots last night. Austin, I want to kind of set to the side because, as he mentioned after the game, it's just really tough to go from not playing NBA basketball to getting dropped into that intense of a series. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned that after the game. It's really hard. But to his credit, he's putting it on the line for the team. So I just have a lot of respect for Austin, what he's doing. Flip the script there. Like, Reed Sheppard was awful in the first three games. He's been awesome two games in a row. We talked after our last show about how, like, the Lakers kind of have to concede some of these pull-up jump shots to Reed. He's hitting them. Hit another massive one last night at the elbow that kind of helped ice the game. He's been kind of bad on defense, but he's been going for these dig-ins, these digs on LeBron, and they've been working. Like, not only the big steal last night, there was one in the first half where LeBron blatantly carried on the Reed Sheppard dig, and he just happened to not get called for it and ended up leading to an open shot in the left corner. But, like, Reed's been playing really well. Alperen Şengün's been solving the Lakers' double teams. Jabari Smith has arguably been one of the most reliable night-to-night scorers in the entire series. Amen Thompson hit 2 threes last night and has been fantastic defensively. All the Rockets players are playing really well, and the core Lakers players are not. Now, where I feel there's a lot of signs for optimism stems from the fact that, like, do I think LeBron, Marcus, and Austin are going to play this poorly two additional times in the series, especially in a Game 7, because it's hard to close out a team on the road. And last night, despite LeBron being unable to make a jump shot and making some defensive errors of his own, despite 6 Marcus Smart turnovers, despite Austin Reeves being 4 for 16 from the field and 2 for 10 on jump shots, it was a 3-point game with a couple minutes left. They were right there. And so, like, whether it's in Game 6 on the road or more likely in a Game 7 at home, I just think we're going to get a better effort and a better performance out of those three. That's going to be really difficult for the Rockets to overcome, which is why I think it makes sense for them to still be the favorite at this point.
Jovan, we look at that. You know, Jason just said better effort. I came out of that game feeling like the Lakers didn't approach that game as a must win from an energy and effort perspective. Am I overreacting to what we saw, or did you have that impression as well?
I thought the first quarter was good, like, right? Like, LA's up 7, and there was, it felt like a continuation of games 1 and 2, and it looked like, okay, they're in control of this game. They're going to win this game. They're going to close it out in 5. Cool. Again, this is now the 4th time in the 5 games where they just have a disastrous stretch in the second quarter that flips the game on its head and ends up with Houston going into halftime with the lead. And from that point, I mean, Houston controlled this game from the middle of the second quarter on. Like, it completely flipped. Reed Sheppard hit that pull up 3 against, I think they had some sort of botched coverage against him. He hits a 3. I think they take a 35-34 lead. From that point on, Houston was in the driver's seat in this game. I think so. Part of it to me, though, has been fatigue. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that to me, the three oldest guys in the rotation, LeBron, Marcus, and Luke, have all progressively looked worse over the course of, like, I think if we're judging just purely like eye test who looked dramatically better in game one compared to game five, it's like the three oldest guys in the series, non-KD edition, in like the two primary rotations on both sides. And it's been LeBron, Marcus, and Luke, and they've all dropped off. I thought LeBron had a strong fourth quarter, but I think the middle of the game could have been better. Luke scored 1 point on 0-for-4 shooting. Like, he, the last three games combined, he scored 22 points. He had 27 in game one, 23 in game two. He's not even reached his game two total over the past three games. He's been completely neutralized and phased out of this series. And then you add in they're targeting him a bunch defensively. And it's like, if he's not scoring and he's getting targeted defensively, it becomes tough to play him. But then you also have JJ phasing out. I mean, Jackson played 10 minutes.
Were you surprised they closed with him? They closed with Luke.
Yeah, I think I wish I got to ask JJ about that. It seemed like they wanted to get Marcus a breather. But that, like, because he came in for Austin at some point in the middle of the fourth. Then Austin came back in for Marcus. And I was like, oh, they're just getting Marcus a breather here. But then they went with him until like almost 2 minutes left. Like, Marcus got a long breather. It was like four or 5 minutes. And I was kind of surprised by that. But like, Luke has become borderline unplayable at this stage. Like, you kind of need him out there as just like a decoy shooter. But I think he'll have a game six or game seven. I think he'll have another moment. He'll hit some shots, but it's been rough these last three games. Marcus didn't score. Like, first half, Marcus was solid. He had 11 points. He hit some shots early. Like, LA's offense was in the mud. It hits a couple of threes and like is doing some Marcus things. And it's like, okay, Marcus, it might be a game two Marcus again. No, he only scored the 11 points in the first half, has multiple turnovers, 0 points in the second half. And it was just like, I mean, he's not been the same guy these last couple of games. And then again, LeBron, I thought was much better than game three and game four, but still not at the same level he was at in game one and game two. So I think to kind of flip this, like, my pessimism right now is just they have not looked right physically. And now it's every other day, right? And last time we saw them after one day off, they got smoked in game four. And if they somehow, you know, let's just say it's like a close loss or something, now you have to find the reserves going into a game seven. And your reward is if you somehow survive in seven and stave off the worst collapse of all time, you now get to play the Oklahoma City Thunder probably like 2 days later. It's going to be a quick turnaround. I think there's been like this narrative out there that they're going to get like a week off until OKC. That's out the door. They needed to sweep Houston or win in five for that to happen. If they play game seven on Sunday, they're probably playing OKC Tuesday or Wednesday. It's going to be like a 2 day break. So they're in a tough spot right now.
I don't think they can even worry about OKC at this point.
No, I mean, you can't.
But honestly,
it's just like, it's an unintended like downside to this path of not closing it out in four or five. Now you're playing with fire of like, you might not even win this series, but even if you do, you're now in a compromised physical state going into the OKC matchup.
It's not so much like that. I'm worried about them thinking ahead about OKC. I just, 2 days off before you play OKC, 5 days off, 2 weeks off before you play OKC. I don't think it's going to matter. And maybe that's overly pessimistic, but I don't think it's going to matter.
Sure.
Let me hit you guys with a stat before we get into Austin that I found particularly interesting in this game. And Jason, if I can get your take on this and what you think is going on here. 15-2 was the total of corner threes the Rockets generated in this game compared to the Lakers. And the Lakers, one corner three they generated in the entire game was shot by Jared Vanderbilt. Why is that the case? It did feel like the Rockets were generating a lot of open looks and a 15 to 1 advantage in corner threes would certainly say that, they're doing a better job getting looks from behind the arc.
Yeah. A big part of that is just the way that the two teams are guarding each other. The Lakers are trying to protect the paint by putting multiple bodies there and especially sending these double teams at Şengün that are leading to some of the rotation situations that are leading to open shots. Whereas the Rockets, for the most part, have been guarding ball screens 2-on-2 and guarding ISOs 1-on-1 and kind of staying home off the ball. We've seen a couple teams around the playoff field that have done this. That was Philly's big adjustment to win game five in Boston, just hanging back and drop and just seeing if they can beat you 2-on-2, 1-on-1. And that's where like I keep focusing on the stars, because like there were a lot of looks in that second half. LeBron missed like a little short fadeaway jump shot from like 10 feet that went rattled in and out. That was like a really good look for him. Austin had two missed layups in the second half that were like legitimately easy layups for him. LeBron had one on an inside seal on Aaron Holiday where he kind of snatched it over the top and just smoked a wide open layup. Rui Hachimura missed a couple of mid-range jump shots in the second half that are kind of his bread and butter that he usually makes. Obviously, like you had the Austin and LeBron both had like probably between the two of them a half dozen like wide open threes and like transition sequences or against drop coverage that they missed. Like it's all about beating the coverage, right? Like you're not going to, like everyone is wondering, like why are the Lakers doubling Şengün? And the reason they're doubling Şengün is because of what happened in the first half of game four, which was he basically just started using his off arm as a battering ram and going right through DeAndre Ayton and through Jackson Hayes and scoring and drawing fouls. Now, did JJ overreact to that a little bit? Maybe. And maybe we'll see more one-on-one coverage against Şengün in game six. But like it didn't come out of nowhere. It came because those guys got their butts kicked in game four. Whereas early in the series, they were holding up one-on-one. And so I think in order to drive that type of reaction out of Houston, there's got to be a certain amount of LeBron's got to score the basketball and Austin's got to score the basketball and the Laker role guys have to score the basketball. The one guy that's like still kind of gambling is Reed. And this is where like LeBron and Austin, well, more LeBron, but when you're driving at Rui's side, you have to just know Reed's going to abandon Rui and gamble. And it's got to be something that LeBron's a little bit more prepped for. I mean, we're in game five here and LeBron was still getting caught off guard by it. Something he's got to keep an eye on. But other than Reed's kind of pointless defensive gameplay gambling, which has been working, there isn't really any aggressive help or aggressive double team coming from the Rockets. They're playing these actions straight up. And so the Lakers have to beat the coverage to dictate the counter, which will be the open looks. And until that happens, it's going to be really hard for them to get some of these clean looks at three. But to be clear, the ones that they got, they missed. Synergy tracked them at 7 unguarded catch and shoots last night. The first one was that Marcus Smart off the left wing, where LeBron posted up first possession, like classic LeBron, reminded me of game 6 against the Warriors in 2023 when he was just caving in Andrew Wiggins's chest. And actually, I thought LeBron's post-ups were mostly pretty good last night. I think that's something the Lakers have to continue to do. But other than that, three from Marcus, they went 0 for 6 on their next 6 unguarded catch and shoot threes the rest of the way. So like a lot of this is like the Lakers are already kind of a low volume 3-point shooting team in this series, but that doesn't mean they can go 0 for. They've got to hit more than they've been hitting.
All right, before we get into Austin Reeves coming back, let's go to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. We certainly appreciate Prize Picks and everything they do. You guys can use the code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. We can make some lineups. Guys, let me know if you see anything that you like here. Cat against Atlanta, 14.5 points.
I like that one.
Yeah, I do. I take that.
That's a little goblin guy, so a lesser payout, but I feel pretty comfortable in Cat.
I'd go Tatum over 19.5 too, because again, like we just talked about, the Sixers' defensive scheme has shifted towards making the Jays scores, and they're guarding actions 2-on-2 and 1-on-1, and the Celtics are going to have to beat it with them scoring the basketball. He also was settling for a lot of pull-up threes in Game 5. I think he'll be more aggressive towards the basket in this one.
I'm also surprised the Maxi line, again, 19.5.
Because of Embiid.
Pretty sure he's gone over that every game this series.
Well, and remember, these are the goblin plays. So these are lower payouts and more expected to happen. But we can triple those up. Although I will say this, it feels a little gross going more on a Celtics player on a Lakers show. But we'll go for it because I do think analytics-wise, you are correct there, Jason. All right, if you guys want to get in on it, use the code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly. Go check it out. Prize Picks, great sponsor for our show. We appreciate them. Link is in the description. All right, guys, let's talk a little bit about the return of Austin Reeves. So Austin came back, I think it was a day or two shy of 4 weeks from the oblique injury. He had been questionable for game 3, for game 4. Jovan, let's start with you this time. What did you think about Austin's return, the pros and cons, all that?
Yeah, I thought it was a mixed bag. I think first and foremost, I give Austin credit for returning quicker than his timetable. Like, again, I've made this point before with Austin, they gave a firm timetable of 4 to 6 weeks, right? And so he beat the 4 week timetable. With Luka, it's been indefinite. They have not given us a clear timetable. If it's just Luka's out for the foreseeable future, we'll give you an update at some point. With Austin, it was like, no, this is a 4 to 6 week injury, and he's done everything he can to return. And so I first and foremost want to give credit to him from a competitive standpoint of this dude was battling to get back and he beat the timetable. So I think that there's some honor in that, in my opinion. So he comes back, and I was not surprised. We talked about he'd like to come off the bench. I was surprised at how much he played, 34 minutes. Now, I think JJ did not specify if there was a minutes restriction, so maybe there wasn't, or maybe there was a 30, 32-minute minutes restriction because it was a playoff game. Maybe JJ pushed it a little bit. But the Lakers kind of ran into a situation, though, where they really needed him with how everyone else was playing. Because I know some people are saying, well, why did he end up playing so much? But it's like, what was the alternative here? Was it more Jake LaRavia? Was it more Jared Vanderbilt? Was it more Luke Kennard, who's not even looking to shoot out there? Was it more Marcus, who's turning the ball over left and right? Like, the Lakers were kind of in a tough spot. And so I think the positives with Austin, I thought you saw immediately pick and roll game looked the best it's looked all series in the first quarter. It did not look the same the next few quarters, but immediately he gets into pick and rolls with DA, with LeBron. He's feeding those guys. He's feeding DA inside. And I thought he made a concerted effort to try to find guys out of the pick and roll. And Lakers are running a lot of empty side pick and rolls on the left side. And they're having some success, and they had that great first quarter. He also got to the free throw line a ton, which the Lakers, I think, missed that. Like last night, 23 of the 27 free throw attempts came from LeBron and Austin. So if you don't have Austin necessarily, like maybe a couple other guys draw some fouls on random possessions, but the free throw shooting was part of LA's offensive advantage last night. One of the things that kept them in the game was Austin was getting to the free throw line at a very high clip. And I think just again, kind of comparing him to Marcus and Luke specifically, because I think those are the two guys he's in competition with from a primary ball handling perspective. I thought he looked like a much better ball handler and playmaker than those two guys, right? He's clearly the best passer of the three. I think he's the best ball handler of the three. And he did have three turnovers, but that was half as many as Marcus. So I thought it was a big boost off of the bench from overall second on the team in scoring. Also, you know, had the six assists. So now, if we want to go to the downsides, 4 for 16 shooting. And for me specifically, it was the inside the arc shooting. He missed 3 or 4 layups slash like, you know, close shots that he typically makes. So he went 2 for 8 inside the arc, 2 for 8 beyond the arc. The 2 for 8 beyond the arc, I kind of have a little bit more grace for, just because he missed the month and he was thrust into 34 minutes playoff environment, one of the best defenses in the league. We know with Austin, sometimes the legs can, like, he's a rhythm based player. And coming off of that type of absence, I don't expect him to necessarily have his legs back for the jumper. But it's the getting to the rim, and I think he missed the left-handed layup. There's a couple on the right side that were like semi-contested, but he should have made, especially with Şengün being the rim protector. So I think inside the arc, he was a bit rusty, and that's an area that could be cleaned up. Defensively, I thought he held up fine in switches. They were trying to bring him up into pick and rolls and get like Amen Thompson blown by him. But I thought, you know, some of the help rotations and just some of the physical battles in the paint, he's going to lose, right? So I thought there was an element of that, but I thought it was a mixed bag. But based on the guy missing a month, like, I don't know what people expected. I would not have expected 22 points and 6 assists. It was not an efficient night. It was not his best game of the season. But I thought, if we are ranking guys, I thought he was their third best player last night behind LeBron and DA. So I think him missing a month and being their third best player, that to me, I would say it was a soft win for LA.
I thought that even the turnovers, when we look at the turnovers, and it can be a bit misleading when you just look at the counting stats in terms of turnover percentage, which calculates based on how many turnovers players has based on possessions used. He actually had a better turnover percentage than Luke Kennard did, had a better turn, obviously better than Marcus Smart, who had one of the worst that we've seen in quite a while. had a better, even had a better turnover percentage than Jackson Hayes did in this game. So the turnovers, a couple of them were a little sloppy. I think you can get a little careless dribbling the basketball, but overall it wasn't a bad turnover game for Austin. The shooting obviously was the biggest thing. Didn't shoot particularly well. The 2-for-8 from three definitely hurt. There was a big three late that he got wide open. He missed that. Coming out of the game, I was a little surprised when I looked at the box score and saw he was 4-for-16. I thought, why did it not feel like Austin was 4-for-16. Three of his misses turned into tip dunks for DeAndre Ayton or putbacks for DeAndre Ayton. So the Lakers still scored on those possessions, and those were possessions where they got Sengun and a switch onto Austin, and then DA was able to just feast and clean up the boards because Sengun was off of him. So they were able to still score on those actions, but Austin's got to do a better job, obviously, knocking down those shots. I thought he did a great job living in the paint. That defensively, even had the one play where he blocked Amen Thompson. He did better than I expected there in terms of sliding his feet and staying in front. Did lose some battles, as you said, Jovan, in the paint, some off-ball stuff. But ultimately, if he had shot even 7-for-16, and we say, well, a few of those turned into offensive rebound opportunities because Austin pulled the big out, it would certainly be more palatable. And then, frankly, probably the Lakers win the game. But 4-for-16, that definitely hurt. You can see it immediately, though, his ability to get into the paint, create havoc there, get into the free throw line. That was something the Lakers had lacked. So all in all, I didn't think it was a bad debut. Had he shot a little better, we'd be talking about, wow, how did Austin come back and have this kind of a game? I really don't think it was a bad return performance from Reeves. Jason, what were your thoughts on it?
Totally agree. I think that it went about as I expected, in the sense that he was inefficient from the field, but just was able to manufacture good offense because he's Austin Reeves and he's good at playing pick and roll. And like we talked about earlier, with the way that Houston's guarding, Austin just has a big advantage attacking a guy like Sengun in ball screens. And I think, like, frankly, like a lot of the foul calls he got were not like the grifty, like maybe he'll get the call, maybe he won't kind of calls. They were calls that are like getting consistently called around the league. Like, oh, you have your arm just like draped over the shooting hand and he can just rake up and get a three-shot foul, or getting downhill easily because Sengun can't contain the ball in ball screens, which is allowing him to draw contact on drives. Like a lot of the stuff that Austin was doing felt replicable to me. And that was despite him missing a bunch of real gimmies that we know Austin can make. Frankly, I think if LeBron goes 2-for-6 from three, and if Marcus has 2 turnovers instead of 6, I think the Lakers win that game. I thought Austin brought more than enough to that equation. I just thought LeBron just didn't have that extra juice, and Marcus was too mistake prone, and that was really too much for them as a team to overcome. But like, I think, you know, Austin's going to continue to get better as the series goes along because it's actually kind of a good matchup for him in terms of the ball screen attack. I thought the Lakers actually did a pretty good job of trying to get Reed Sheppard switched onto Austin before they ran ball screens. And when they got Reed switched onto him, then it was like a pretty great shot just about every time. And so I think, like, really it's just about kind of chaining this all together. Austin's doing his job. I thought he was an overall positive impact. I agree with Jovan. I thought Ayton and LeBron were the two best players, and I thought Austin was a clear third. I thought that, again, if you just piece together a little bit more juice out of LeBron, like, everyone knows LeBron's jump shot's not really there this year, but if he goes 3-for-9 instead of 1-for-9, that makes a huge difference. Austin doesn't smoke those two wide-open layups that he never misses. Austin's been one of the most efficient rim finishers in the league this year. Like, out of all the shots he missed, it was the layups that were the strangest. And if he can get those back, and if the Lakers just kind of avoid some of the mistakes they made, like, again, like, Rui missed several wide open mid-range jump shots that are very much his bread and butter. Yeah. Luke Kennard had a couple of wide open looks from three in the first half that he missed. Like, this was, that's why I'm trying to bring some positivity here. Like, credit the Rockets. They've shown a lot of resilience for the second year in a row after dropping big in the series. A lot of their core players are playing really well. I still would be worried if I was a Rockets fan with how they stack up against the Spurs and Thunder, but they're not embarrassing themselves the way they did early in the series. But the Lakers can just play so much better than they did in game 5. And I believe they will at some point in the next couple of games.
So that leads us directly into our next topic, which is, are the Lakers in trouble? Jason, you think no, they're not.
I, again, as I said at the top, I think we would all be completely irrational to pretend like there's no threat here. One of the things, this is something that we haven't really talked about that I think is worth mentioning. This Rockets team, this is the way their shooting has been all season. They'll have stretches, multi-game stretches where they can't make a damn shot. And then they'll have multi-game stretches where they shoot 40% from three. They just do. Like, they kind of are like this in a lot of ways. Like, they can get hot from three. And so it's really this simple. Will Houston be favored in game six? Yes. Can the Lakers win that game? Yes. But the Rockets will be favored. So it's more likely than not that we're coming home for a game seven. The Lakers will be favored in a game seven, but we would all be insane to not think that the Rockets can win that game by just hitting shots and the Lakers not hitting shots, just like they did tonight. So, like, there certainly is some concern there. But, like, if I had to bet, because I think if the Lakers get a more well-rounded performance from their best players, I think they're going to win. So, like, if I had to bet what's the more likely outcome, I think it's more likely that we get a back-against-the-wall, good LeBron game, good Austin game, good Marcus game, which, as we all know, trickles down in the form of smaller, more achievable roles for the role players, and they're able to get out of this series. But at this point, like, forget about OKC, like you guys said earlier. At this point, you're just trying to avoid historical catastrophe. It's just about surviving. And, like, it's certainly on the table that they're in some trouble. But I think the Lakers should still be a considerable favorite at this point.
See, what you just said there is one of my concerns. And not that I think they're going to lose. I think they will find a way to win the series, whether it's game six or game seven. I think they will find a way to win the series. But what you just said about now, it's about avoiding catastrophe. You win game one, you win game two. Then you win game three. It's okay, the Lakers are the hunters, right? And now they're the hunted. And now rather than, hey, we're going to go out there and surprise everybody and get the upset, now it's, we just hope we don't lose and do something catastrophic. And there's a difference between playing to win and playing not to lose. And so my hope is that the Lakers have that aggressive mindset and not the mindset of, we just don't want to have this catastrophic collapse. They have to go out there and take the series. And remember coming in that they were the heavy underdog and they're the team that should be going out there and surprising everybody, even if expectations have flipped since the series went 3-0. Jovan, 7.5 out of 10 level of concern for you. Where do you think we go from here?
I mean, despite that, I would say the most likely outcome for me right now is Lakers in seven. The second most likely outcome is Lakers in six. And then the third most likely outcome, and there's only three, is Rockets in seven. There's a couple things here. So for me, I thought the Lakers, like when we talked about the outline for LA winning this series, like what was the pathway for LA to win the series, we talked about the importance of game one and how important game one would be from a confidence perspective. And it's like Houston's entering this series as heavy favorites, at least on paper, at least according to Vegas. And the Lakers needed to come in, send a message in game one, win game one, and take control of the series. And that's exactly how this has played out. But I do think, like, we've talked about some of the fatigue and physical like just issues for the Lakers the last couple games. I also think there's been a huge shift in Houston's confidence, and like Houston is puffing their chest out. They are talking whatever they want to, like, they say whatever they want to the Lakers. And I thought, like, after the game four situation, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more fight from LA in that game five, to Trevor's earlier point of, like, they did have that in the first quarter, but you had a guy on, you had Alperen Şengün come out and say, we're going to hit them all night. And, like, we're younger, we're going to heal faster than them. You have Jabari Smith come out and say, oh yeah, we're obviously the better team. And that's not how the series has played out up to this point. But Houston, I think, has a newfound confidence that is, like, probably the thing that concerns me even more than LA's offense right now, is just, I think Houston believes they can win this series. And that's something that LA is going to have to navigate here the last couple of games, especially if, because it's not, I would still favor LA if it goes seven. And again, I think that's my current pick in how this plays out. But, like, you also would have a lot of momentum on the Houston side if they've won three in a row and they're also quietly, like, and we blew game three and probably should have won this thing in six. Like, that's a lot of confidence on the Houston side. And at that point, they're just in a different place than they were coming off of the first couple of games. But I think it's really difficult to beat a team four times in a row in a series. We saw that from the Lakers side with how they played in game four. So I think the Lakers win this. The only X factor that's remaining for me, and it could go one of two ways, is Kevin Durant, because he's already ruled out for game six. But if Kevin Durant comes back in game seven, that goes one of two ways. It either amplifies and propels everything Houston's doing, and he just fits in perfectly, and it's like less Josh Okogie, less Aaron Holiday, less DFS, and it's just it takes Houston over the top. Or it undermines everything that they've been building here these last few games, and all of a sudden the Lakers can throw the traps, they struggle out of the doubles, the offense is clunky, and LA closes them out in seven. That's assuming he even potentially playing in game seven. We just don't know that yet, and we don't even know if there's going to be a game seven, but that's an X factor here that could go one of two ways. But I would go right now Lakers in seven, if not Lakers in six. But I think my bigger concern has been like looking ahead now, whatever puncher's chance you thought they had against OKC, I think that is dying a quick death right now.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's just get through this series and then see what's what in the next round. But you got to find your way through it. You got to find a way to win this one. And that's where I ultimately came away disappointed. I didn't feel like the Lakers played with the requisite force to come out here and take this game through the second, through midway through the fourth quarter. It felt like they tried to turn it on again late. And by that point, I'm like, that was too little too late. You needed to get going a lot earlier, which is going to play off some of our comments here we're going to get to in our chat. So we're going to dedicate the rest of the show to that. We're going to get to a number of topics there. But first, we need to give a shout out to our final sponsor for the show, and that is Cozy Earth.
All right, before we keep going, quick shout out to Cozy Earth for sponsoring today's show. And I'll be real, this one actually fits perfectly with what we do, because we're on here grinding, talking hoops, reacting to games. But when you finally get that downtime, you want to be comfortable. And that's where Cozy Earth comes in. They've got robes and slippers that are built for those quiet moments, like after a long day or just kicking back and watching a game like this. And with Mother's Day coming up, it's actually a really good gift idea, because it's not just like a random gift. It's something that she's actually going to use every day. Their robes are super soft. They've got different styles. And the slippers are built to be worn all day, not just around the house for 5 minutes. It's just one of those things that feels premium right away. And the best part, you can try it risk-free. They've got a 100-night trial and a 10-year warranty. So you're not really taking a risk here. So if you're looking for something thoughtful this year for Mother's Day, go to CozyEarth.com and use code HMA for 20% off. And if there's a survey after checkout, just let them know that you came from our show. Because at the end of the day, home starts with mom.
All right, a big thank you to Cozy Earth for sponsoring the show. That code is HMA. Guys, let's get into some of the chat questions, comments. I know we got a few that came in before the show started. LeBronke said, although LeBron made the huge three in game three, I cringe every time he takes a jump shot. I guess it's the shooting form for me. What's going on? LeBron is, I believe it's 0-for-9 from three in the last two games. Guys, what's happening with LeBron shooting right now?
Do you guys remember in 2023 when he was having the rough jump shooting season, he would have these stretches where for like two or three games, he would shoot better, but then he would just immediately fall back into the kind of funk that he was in. Like in my experience following LeBron, same thing happened in 2015, by the way. In my experience following LeBron, when he has a bad shooting season, he doesn't get out of it until the summer. And he might have a better game in game six or game seven, and they're going to need that. But like, I would be floored if he just shot 40% from three the rest of this series and the entirety of the Oklahoma City series. Like, what I expect, and it's really unfortunate that this is the case, but what I expect is for LeBron to go into this offseason and then come into next year just an awesome jump shooter, because that's what happened each of the last two times he had this type of season. 2024 was one of the best jump shooting seasons of his entire career after that 2023 fiasco. But I mean, in this regular season this year, he was at 0.9 points per jump shot. That's like really, really bad. He was 42% inside of 17 feet, which is mediocre. Not even mediocre. That's bad compared to the stars. Like Shea's 16% better than that, for example. He was 38% from 17 feet to the three-point line and 32% from three. Like LeBron has been a bad jump shooter all year. And even when he's had good stretches, he struggled to sustain it. And this is kind of just what he is. It's unfortunate, but like NBA, LeBron's career history tells us he's not digging out of this.
Yeah, I think they just need one good game out of them.
Yep.
One good game.
Game three was the good shooting game. Game two and game three. He's shooting 32% on threes for the season. He's at 28% in the series. So he's underperforming a little bit, but I don't, maybe they get the one game where he goes like 5 for 7 and that's enough for them to win. But history suggests that, to Jason's point, like he's kind of a low to mid at best 30s 3-point shooter right now.
Just really quickly for you guys' reference, like in the Western Conference Finals run, he had 5 games where he made at least 3 threes. And he finished the playoff run shooting 26% from three. Like he'll have a 4 for 7. He'll have a 3 for 7. He'll have like these efficient games mixed in, and then he just can't make them over the large sample. It's so bizarre, but like LeBron needs months working on his shot to dig out of this mess.
Hopefully he's able to figure it out sooner than that. But again, if they can get a one hot 3-point shooting game, I know they already got one, but can they get one more in game 6 or game 7? That would go a long way. Francis Laker said, Rui getting clamped by Reed was embarrassing. That was one of the big things that fans keyed on early, was hiding Reed Sheppard on Rui Hachimura. And then when the Lakers did kind of ditch their offense and give the ball to Rui, he wasn't able to take advantage of those situations. How should the Lakers handle that? What do you guys think they should do in that situation when the Rockets are hiding Reed Sheppard on Rui? How can they still find ways to punish the Rockets for having him on the floor?
You can go ahead, Jason.
So there's two things that I'm noticing. One, this thing where Rui just doesn't shoot against a hard closeout, which has continued to be an issue over his entire Laker tenure. Two, and this is actually kind of combo in the same thing. LeBron and all the Lakers ball handlers need to do a better job of identifying when Reed is abandoning Rui to do those swoop in steals and hit him, because those are when Rui can actually make him pay. On the deep seals, there's two issues I've seen with Rui. One, he exposes the basketball and Rui just attacks him down low, or Reed just attacks him down low. And then two, there's a lot of these where like he'll get a deep seal and they'll throw the ball over the top and then Şengün will send the double. And Rui just doesn't see that he can drop it off to the big kind of trailing down the middle, because Rui's never been like a great passer in those sorts of situations. But like I don't really see any universe where that turns around. He's too slow getting up into his shot on a deep post seal, which buys time for Reed to dig at the basketball and buys time for Şengün to come down and help. The only thing I could really see is Rui's got to just be more aggressive shooting over the top of him from the 3-point line.
I agree. I think in game four, I think it's a smart, like I want to give Houston's coaching staff some credit here, because I'll speak for myself and not you guys. Like I was pretty harsh on them in terms of the game one game plan, the game two adjustments. Like I thought they were and a lot of the things they've done, I think were low hanging fruit that they should have either done to start the series or quickly done in game two. But like, you got to give them credit for making some of these adjustments. And this was an adjustment we saw last year from teams. If you go back to how teams defended the big three down the stretch of the season, it was a lot of, well, we have to put our best perimeter defender on Luka. Then we have to put a certain amount of size on LeBron. And then like whoever's the next remaining perimeter guy, we're going to put that guy on Austin. And a lot of times it was like, we're just going to put a 6'3" guy on Rui, because that's all that's left in our defensive core. So I think the Lakers have had success against this before. I think they could go back to some of those things. Now they don't have the third star to kind of draw the attention, and that is its own thing. But I think they got to be careful with trying to overdo it, because I thought in game four they tried to force feed the Rui matchup and it almost took them out of their offense. And it's just, he's not a guy who's going to, I don't think he's great at like generating that advantage against a smaller player. I think he can get out. I think one thing he's done well in the series is getting out in transition and getting those deep seals where Reed just has to foul him. And he's done that several times. And if he is able to get some duck ins and like post him up directly under the basket, I like that. And to Jason's point, he needs to just take the three. He's got a 4 or 5 inch advantage over Reed. You should be able to shoot over him closing out at you. But other than that, and maybe like racking a closeout, taking the pull up midi, I don't think it should be like Rui pick and roll, Rui pick and pop, Rui force feeding Rui, because I just don't think he's that type of offensive player. I think he's much more of a advantage finisher than an advantage creator. And they've tried to do the pick and pops. Houston's been very comfortable either showing two out the ball, then rotating back out, whether it's the read directly on the ball or it's someone else rotating over, then they're in rotation. Like the Lakers have tried that. They've tried to do spam some Rui pick and pop. It just hasn't really worked. So I think they got to just continue to run their offense, and there will inevitably be some advantages that are created where Rui can exploit. But if the game plan is like force feed Rui the ball against Reed, it just hasn't worked the first or, you know, the last couple of games. And I just don't think Rui's that type of player.
I still think conceptually there's going to be some ways to run the pick and pop with Rui to at least get Reed involved in the action. I did like the way they were targeting both Reed and Sengun in some of the sets early. And I would say that was right after Austin came in. They were able to get Reed onto Austin and then able to get Sengun involved in the pick and roll with Ayton and Austin and Reed and Sengun defensively. And that was interesting and something I'd like to see them lean more into. But I do agree with you on that.
I think that's more about getting them switched onto the ball, though. Like that's exactly. It. Like, I'm for that. To be clear, like I think you target Reed and Sengun as much as possible. I'm just more so saying it felt like at times in game 4 and 5, it was like, well, Rui should have this advantage. Let's try and create it for him. And it just wasn't working.
Yeah, the goal shouldn't be create the advantage for Rui or feed the ball to Rui and abandon the offense. It should be within the offense. How does Rui capitalize on the advantage that he just naturally is going to have? And that's part of it, too, is you put Reed on Rui and the... And there's going to be this shiny neon, this flashing neon sign of, Rui is, you know, 6 inches taller than Reed Sheppard. Quick, get in the ball. And that's going to cause teams to take the bait and abandon their offense. And I think they've got to continue to do the things that were working for them, not worry so much about that. And the advantages of having Rui on or Rui defended by Reed will just happen organically. All right, let's go here. Takes us almost 24 seconds to run some kind of offense. Jason, this is now 2 games in a row that the Lakers have had a better offensive rebounding percentage than the Houston Rockets have. The Rockets have not entirely abandoned the offensive glass, but it's not nearly what we saw in the first 3 games. And yet both these games have been Lakers losses. And both these games, I think the Lakers have had a lot more trouble getting into their offense. Is this strategic shift for Houston going against what they've been on the season, which is this badass offensive rebounding team, has worked out very well for them? How do the Lakers now counter this?
Yeah, I mean, that was the real takeaway that I had when I watched the film from game 4. And I think we saw a continuation of that in game 5, which is basically the real value add is less controlling the Lakers in transition and more getting to their pickup point earlier and applying more ball pressure. And I think in general, like, the Rockets really have controlled this series with their defense more than anything else. Like, to JJ's point, like JJ said after the game, he's like, we held him to 99. And he's not wrong about that. They held him to 99 with the Rockets hitting quite a few threes in this game. They had 14 of them. So, like, really, this is a game that was lost on defense. It's a wear and tear game. Like, a big part. Like, again, they've got to find a way to hit these shots despite this circumstance, but a big part of why they're missing shots is the wear and tear and the ball pressure and just kind of getting up into their legs and making these guys fatigue over the course of games. And so I saw someone say this on Twitter and I 100% agree with them. I'm not remembering who said it, so I can't credit them properly, but they said that Ime Udoka is clearly leaning into the fact that his team is younger. And that is the truth, in the sense that he understands that his advantage in this matchup is endurance and athleticism and the ability to be ready to go 2 nights later multiple times over the course of a series. And I think that that's been a smart adjustment. I liked how Jovan broke it down earlier. Like, I think we actually talked about this before the series, by the way. I think we talked about how that, like, JJ would have a strategic advantage early in the series, but that eventually Ime would figure some shit out. And that's kind of been, well, like, what has happened in this series. And to their credit, like, everybody from Ime to all 4 of the Rockets' core young players to even the role player shooting, like even Dorian Finney-Smith coming in and hitting a couple of threes, like the Rockets are just kind of getting stronger as the series progresses and the Lakers are getting weaker.
All right, let's jump to this question here. Christopher said, Rui will not be re-signed. Rockets, Reed exposed his limited offensive ability outside of shooting, and Book is out on him to counter him in the playoff series. I mean, I'll get your guys' thoughts, but I've been trying to drive home that making long-term decisions based on the results of one game or even two games is typically a mistake. You don't want to necessarily get involved in that because a guy who doesn't have a lot of utility or struggles in one series may be great in the next series, maybe great for segments of a season, maybe off. Tari Eason couldn't shoot the damn ball for 3.5 months. Guys go through ebbs and flows. They're not static when it comes to their play on the floor. And so we just have to keep that in mind. It's not every game is not necessarily a reaction and an indication of what a player needs to be in terms of their long-term utility with the team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything that we're seeing from Rui is necessarily a surprise. I think we've known Rui's warts for a few years now, and he's largely been the same player. I think he deserves a lot of credit for growing into the caliber of shooter that he's become. I mean, top 10 shooter percentage-wise this season. Would like to see more volume from him in that sense, but overall, like, he's developed into one of the best three-point shooters in the league and one of the best mid-range shooters in the league. So that is a valuable combination for a floor spacing role player. However, as we've talked about with the Reed matchup and how that's sort of taken him out to a degree and also affected the Lakers offense, I think there are some basic limitations with him in terms of if I have a 6'8", 6'9" player in my rotation, I want that player to either defend at a high level or rebound at a high level. And Rui doesn't either. Mm-hmm. And so he is kind of like this stretch forward that does have a lot of offensive utility as a finisher and as a guy who can attack you on the weak side from a variety of ways. But like, I think like defensively, Amen Thompson has looked progressively more comfortable against him. I thought the first couple games were much better than these last few games. And there's just, I think, a real limitation there. And then the rebounding has been better overall, I would say, the last few weeks, like post, I think Luka going out in particular, because Luka is such a dominant defensive rebounder that's allowed for more rebounds, and Rui has been better in some regards. But I would say that if you're looking at the Lakers' priorities this summer, my priorities would be, you got to figure out, like, Austin, they'll keep on the cap hold and re-sign him to some number. I don't know what that number is, but they're going to keep Austin and prioritize that. I think it has been trending in the way of keeping LeBron, just depends on what that number is. Then I think you have to keep Marcus. I know, you know, some people are off Marcus after last night. Marcus has still been a net positive in the series. He's still been a net positive on the season. He's been their fourth best player. You have to keep Marcus. And then I think you also have to figure out the center position. Do you bring in another wing? And then after those things that you're checking those boxes, now I think you could turn your attention to Luke and Rui. And so I'm open to Luke and or Rui being back, depending on the number, depending on the context of LA's cap situation. But to me, I would prioritize Austin, LeBron, and Marcus are the three guys I'm trying to retain at certain numbers. I also think I would like a better and more consistent starting center. I would like a better 6'8" two-way wing. And then I will look at Rui and Luke. Because I think one thing with those two, in my opinion, is that they both are clearly bench players on the best version of this team. And I think that's played out. So I would prioritize adding a couple starters, or at least adding one more starter, keeping your three of your top four players this year. And then if you still have the leftover cap space, that goes to Rui and Luke.
Has your opinion changed, Jovan, on where, if let's say it comes down to one or the other, Luke or Rui, where are you at on that? Assuming money is even.
I've gone back and forth, to be honest. I would say up until the Luka and Austin injuries, it was Rui over Luke for me. Then after Luke comes out and has that triple double, has 16 rebounds, the second most rebounds a guard has had this season, which was just, I thought, a wild stat. He has the 50 points across the first couple games, and it looks incredible. And then it's kind of turned into a pumpkin these last three games. And it's just been completely, like, for as maybe like Rui not taking advantage of some of these things, Rui's still been dropping 12 points, 14 points. He's still been a factor offensively, even if it feels like he's leaving something on the table. Luke has not been a factor. He has 8 points over the past two games, has not made a three over the past two games. And he still played 30 plus minutes, both of those games. So I guess I would say Luke might have the, I think Luke has the higher ceiling, because I think the ceiling in game one and game two is higher than anything we've seen from Rui as a Laker. But the floor is obviously, like, he's basically unplayable, where I don't think Rui is ever unplayable. I just think you might have him in a role where you'd probably want to scale him down a bit. So I would say, I don't want to Trevor's point, I don't want to overreact to like the last three games, but it has been three games. It's been more than the first two games, like in terms of, I think Luke being a bit of a negative in the series. So I go back and forth. I would like to see how the rest of the series plays out. I'd like to see how the OKC series, if LA advances, plays out. But right now I'm kind of leaning more, if I had to pick between the two, I'd probably pick Rui. But it depends on the price. If it's like $8 million for Luke or $14 million for Rui, I think that's enough of a gap where I'd prefer Luke.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Rui that's tough is, like, there's like, he has abundantly made it clear that he is a good off-ball offensive player, in the sense that he can score in transition and he can score in spot ups. He's been very efficient there. I think it's a little complicated in the sense that, like, because he doesn't actually convert spot ups into shot attempts very often, because he'll either move the ball, or like, if he doesn't love the shot he gets, he'll just keep it moving. He's very efficient, but he's very low volume. And so, like, just to give you guys some perspective, like, in this series, Rui's logging about 5 spot up attempts per game, and that's including twos and threes, where he shoots a shot
too low,
driving and close
way up. Too low.
It's way too low. Jabari Smith, for example, 7.5. So literally a time and a half as frequent, just strictly looking at spot up threes and the shots off the driving of closeouts, right? And part of that is Jabari will take contested threes. He'll take them a little bit further out. Jabari's like comfortable pushing 2-3 feet behind the line, and he's just like a more aggressive scorer. Now, Jabari is about to go on to a contract extension where he is going to make about $24 million a year on average over the next several seasons. But, like, he is a substantially better rebounder, like just a way, way, way better rebounder. He's averaging 8 rebounds a game in this series. He has, in this series, 10 offensive rebounds. Guess how many rebounds Rui has despite being guarded by Reed Sheppard? Guess how many offensive rebounds he has?
2-3.
I was going to say 1. So.
He has okay. 3. Like, he's a substantially better defensive player. He's getting almost 2 stocks a game, and has more utility in different positions and doesn't make as many mistakes. Obviously, he had that big blunder in game 3, and that they're, you know, the Rockets are not going to sit here and preach that he's like some awesome foundational player. But the point is like, Rui makes $18 million right now. And my guess is that his agent is going to want around $18 to $20 million a year moving forward. And if the Lakers were to re-sign Rui Hachimura at anything over $15 million, when a guy in Houston is making about 23, 24 and is like twice as good at basketball as Rui Hachimura is, that's a huge deficit for the Lakers moving forward. And so it comes down to the things we've talked about all season, which is like, I really like Rui. I think he's a great dude. I find his personality to be super likable. I think he's a great locker room guy. He clearly just like never complains and just does his job. And he's had some big moments, like that game 3 is a big moment in game 3. He's had big shots, the big shot over KD in game 2. Like, he's had a lot of big moments in a Laker jersey, but like, he is flat out not good enough at enough things to be the kind of guy that the Lakers can afford in their current build to tie up, you know, $60 million over 4 years or whatever that number ends up being. And so that's where it gets tricky. And like, I 100% agree with Jovan. Like, I think you figure out LeBron and Marcus and the center position. Cause there's the other thing too. Jackson had a great season and he's been bad in this series.
Yep.
And here we are again, just like it was last year, where he's borderline unplayable against, frankly, not as good a front court as what Minnesota had. And so the Lakers have some big picture decisions that they need to make. And I 100% agree with Jovan in the sense that, like, at this point, locking up Marcus and LeBron and bringing back Austin, that is your like core set of decisions you have to make. I think there has to be some trade for some sort of good athletic wing. And then from there, it's like, can we bring Luke at a discount? Sure. Can we bring Rui back at a discount? Sure. But if not, you're actually genuinely better off replacing them with veteran minimum level talent. You just are.
the key word there that you're using is discount, because when you look at Rui, like with Austin, with Jackson Hayes as well, their cap holds are probably lower than what they're actually going to get. Certainly with Austin, perhaps with Jackson, whose cap holds $4.5 million. So you can keep those cap holds on your books and still have all the spending power you want. Rui's cap hold is almost $28 million. You're not going to use that. That doesn't make any sense. He's not going to make $28 million. So instead, you've got to come up with a good number, because whatever you pay Rui, unlike with Austin and unlike perhaps with Jackson, it's actually going to impact the amount of spending power you've got this summer right now. If you go and give Rui that $18 to $20 million, you can't do it. You have to get a significant discount on his salary. And if you do, great. I have no problem bringing it back as long as you can get that discount. But if you're paying Rui as a guy who does more things than just shoot the 15-footer and the three, then that's a problem, because right now those are the two main things that he provides. Everything else I think that he does is below average. And look, he's a good player. He's not somebody that you want to lose for nothing. You just got to be real careful with what you pay him. Otherwise, it can really hurt your spending power.
Jabari killed us on the offensive glass in the second half, like just flying in and crashing. He beat LeBron on one. He beat Marcus Smart on one. Like, that dude is an athletic problem on both ends of the floor. It's very dangerous to tie up large amounts of salary on mediocre players. Just ask the Denver Nuggets right now on guys like Christian Brown, and you know, like you can end up in some trouble.
It's very punitive in today's cap environment to pay anybody on your roster 1 through 15 that isn't living up to their salary. You just can't do it. A couple of ones I can go through real quick. The loss buys some time for Luka. Are the Lakers are extending the series on purpose to get Luka back against the Thunder? No, that would be
so I just looked this up,
basketball gods,
because yeah. I've seen a lot of this in the chat. I just want to clarify this. So last season, there were 2 7-game series in the first round, Denver and the Clippers and the Warriors and the Rockets. In both instances, they ended, one ended on a Saturday, one ended on a Sunday. It was the exact same schedule from a, like, playoff started on a Saturday 2 weeks into the following weekend. So, you know, different dates, but same, you know, calendar schedule. They both started game one 2 days later. So the notion, I feel like there's been this notion that the Lakers are buying time to try and get Luka back. It's like, no, if they had won this in 4 or 5, I think game one would have been Sunday. Game one now might be Tuesday. So you bought like 2 days, but that's not that much time. It's really a matter of like shifting one game back in the series, which again, maybe that, but you're also putting yourself in a physically compromised state where you're fatigued now after going through a 7-game war and now going to play the freshly rested Thunder, who have been off for a week. So the notion that, like, I've seen people be like, oh, they'll have a week. No, it's not. They're not having a week off. They're having a day off, honestly, and at most. And so I think that's where they need to close this out in 6. If you close out in 6, even if you play Monday or Tuesday, you do get a couple extra days in that sense. But if it goes 7, the series is starting somewhere between Sunday and Tuesday, like based on historical precedent. So that's not that much of a difference.
And they're literally running the same schedule as last season. This is not any change. This isn't anything new. And trying to extend, adding extra games to any playoff series is a terrible idea. I mean, look what happened to Minnesota. Injuries can happen at any time. There's no guarantee that just getting Luka back doesn't means that everybody else stays healthy. Mamadou said, don't mean to overreact, but I think this team is so flawed. Realistically, who do you think deserves to be on the team next season? We kind of just talked about that, so we don't need to rehash that topic, but we do appreciate the super chat, Mamadou. Again, the priorities, obviously Luka, Austin, LeBron, Smart. We'll see what happens with all those guys, and then you go from there, and then it trickles down to a Rui, a Kennard, a Hayes, and on and on down the row we go. Let's check out this one. 2024, JJ, first coach to play start full starters for a half, no rest. 2025, verge of blowing a 3-0 lead, legacy defining series, fair to say.
Actually, I have a real quick brief take here.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that if the Lakers blow a 3-0 lead, that it will have massive implications on the court of public opinion.
Sure.
Because it's just the reality of just the way the space is, right? Like, everyone that has a beef with anybody involved with the Lakers, whether it's the coach or LeBron or Luka or Austin or anybody, they'll have something to latch on to. But, like, it is completely absurd that the Rockets came into the series as a -750 favorite. that everyone thought they were the better team, and that the Lakers, just because they happened to overachieve in the early stretch of the series, including flipping a 6-point deficit in 11 seconds to win game three, that that would somehow work against them. And I do think that the vast majority of well-meaning, objective basketball fans will acknowledge the series for what it is if the Lakers blow it. Still a catastrophe, but really just kind of a bizarre circumstance where the Lakers overachieved early in the series. But it is also important to acknowledge that the court of a public opinion just doesn't work like that. And there are going to be people that say shit, and everybody who's involved with the Laker media, Laker fans, anybody like that, there's a certain amount of like, we're just going to have to accept the fact that if this goes south, that we're going to have to hear a lot of bullshit. And that's just kind of the way it goes.
Yeah, 100%. You know, that's coming. Again, had game four and game five taking place in game one and game two, everybody would have said, yep, that's exactly the way we expected the series to go. It's all about expectations and what is expected in that moment. Now the Lakers are up. The expectation is they finish out the series. And again, rightfully so, but they have been the underdog betting line wise in four of the five games. It wasn't until game five that they were the favorite to win the game. They were almost a double digit underdog going into game three of this series, or maybe it was game four. Either way,
Their wins were underdog wins.
They've been underdog wins. They've been underdog wins. They were the underdog going into this. Jason, apparently you got a shout out from Nick Wright on First Things First for being the only person that gave the Magic a chance.
Dude, it's so funny. I literally like thought that from the beginning, I thought they had a really good chance to compete. And then after game one, I picked the Magic. And then literally with each passing game, I've liked the Magic chances more because like they barely scraped away game three and game four. They should have lost both of those games. And then now you have the Franz injury. So as much as I'd like to take a victory lap here, like I wouldn't be surprised if Detroit still won the series.
Right. And then lastly, why doesn't JJ go deeper into his bench? You know, what's funny is whenever things aren't going well on the court, the immediate assumption is always that the guy that's over on the bench is going to do a better job than whoever's on the court, which I always think is faulty reasoning. But we could make an argument for maybe some Bronny minutes, perhaps. But otherwise, I just don't see. I've gotten people telling me, well, Adu Thiro or Dalton Connect can come in and score. I just don't see those guys working out in a positive way for the Lakers or shifting what we're seeing so far.
Agreed.
All right, everybody. Tough spot to be in now, right? You got one day off. You got to go play tomorrow in Houston. So today you got to travel, and then you got to go play tomorrow in Houston. You know the crowd is going to be rocking there. The Lakers have got to find a way to get it done, whether it's game six or game seven. Obviously, the preference would be to win game six. They are once again the underdog right now. Last I looked, at 3.5-point underdog. We'll see if the Lakers can figure some things out, get some shots to drop, and hand the Houston Rockets a loss on their home court. Guys, obviously not the best coming off of a couple losses, but always a great time when the three of us get to link up and talk Lakers basketball.
Next time we chat, it's either going to be historic collapse or OKC game one preview. One of those two.
Let's hope it's the latter.
Yeah. Wow. It's really setting the stakes for the next show.
All right, everybody. Next show is going to be a big one. That's coming up on my... Either way, historic collapse or Lakers Thunder setting the stage for that. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't done so yet. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Till then, everybody, see ya and stay safe.